You ever think about how a simple will could shake up American law? Well, that's exactly what happened in Calder v. Bull.
It's 1798. The Constitution is brand new.
And the Supreme Court's just getting started.
Yeah, and this case dives right into the ex post facto clause, that whole idea that you can't get punished for something that wasn't a crime when you actually did it.
Right. That seems pretty straightforward.
Right. You'd think so. But Calder v. Bull throws us a curveball because, well, it's not even about an actual crime.
Okay, so tell me more. What's the deal with this will?
So, picture this. Connecticut, 1793, a man named Norman Morrison passes away.
Oh boy, here we go.
And leaves behind this will that basically sends his heirs into a legal free-for-all.
Classic inheritance drama.
The probate court, they initially reject the will.
Ah, so someone's happy, someone's not.
Yeah, one of the heirs, Calder, he thinks he's in the clear.
But then what? I'm guessing things don't stay that way.
Here's where it gets wild. The Connecticut legislature, they step in and say, nope, we're hitting rewind. They passed this resolution in 1795.
2 years later.
Yeah, basically granting a new hearing for this whole probate case.
Even though the deadline for appeals was over, right?
Oh, way past.
Talk about a legal plot twist.
So they have the hearing, and surprise, surprise.
The will gets approved.
You got it.
Okay, so someone's celebrating.
Mr. and Mrs. Bull, the beneficiaries, they're pretty thrilled.
And I bet Calder's not sending them a congratulations card.
Not quite. He's crying foul, saying this whole thing is basically an illegal ex post facto law situation.
Like they manipulated time to change the outcome.
That's his argument. The legislature created a new law just to apply it to his case retroactively.
Hmm. Tricky.
He loses in the Connecticut courts, but he's not giving up. Takes the case all the way to the Supreme Court.
Setting the stage for a major showdown.
Absolutely. A showdown over just how far legislative power can go.
So let's break this down. You mentioned the ex post facto clause. What exactly does that prohibit?
Well, Justice Chase, he lays it out pretty clearly in the opinion.
Yeah.
It all comes down to criminal law. Like, you can't make something a crime after the fact.
Okay, so no making up rules as you go.
Right. Let's say jaywalking is legal today, but tomorrow, bam, it's a felony.
I better watch my step.
The ex post facto clause says you can't punish someone for jaywalking today under that new law.
Makes sense. You can't change the rules of the game after someone's already playing.
Exactly. And you also can't suddenly increase the punishment for something retroactively. Imagine the penalty for, say, speeding suddenly doubled.
Ouch.
You can't go back and punish someone who sped last week under that harsher penalty.
Okay, so it's all about fairness. Knowing the rules beforehand.
Absolutely. Predictability in the criminal justice system.
Yeah.
It ensures that people know what they're getting into. And there are two more things the ex post facto clause prohibits. Changing the rules of evidence to make convictions easier after the crime, and changing the rules to require less or different testimony to convict someone after the crime.
So back to Calder and his will case. He's claiming that the legislature basically pulled a fast one, created this new law to apply it retroactively. Sounds like it goes against that whole ex post facto idea.
Right, but here's the catch. The Supreme Court says, hold on, this isn't a criminal matter.
Oh, I see. They're making a distinction.
It's about probate, inheritance, property that falls under civil law.
So even if it feels like the legislature meddled with time, it wasn't actually unconstitutional because it was a civil case.
That's the key takeaway here, that ex post facto clause. It's specifically about criminal law as defined in this case.
So Calder's out of luck.
Well, he had another argument up his sleeve. He also said this Connecticut law, it violated Connecticut's own state constitution.
Oh, interesting. So now we're talking states' rights.
Right. And the Supreme Court kind of pumps the brakes here. They say, whoa, hold up. That's not really for us to decide.
So they're drawing a line in the sand. Federal power versus state power.
Exactly. They're cautious about overstepping. They say, we interpret the U.S. Constitution and state courts, well, they deal with their state constitutions.
Okay, that makes sense. So they ruled for Mr. and Mrs. Bull, saying this wasn't an ex post facto issue and they wouldn't interfere with state matters. Case closed, right?
Well, not quite. There's another layer to this case that makes it even more fascinating.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
Even though the justices all agreed on the outcome that this Connecticut law wasn't ex post facto, they had different reasons why they got there.
Ooh, now this is where it gets juicy. different interpretations. I love it. Tell me everything.
Yeah, so we've got these concurring opinions, like separate tracks leading to the same destination.
Okay, like parallel legal universes.
Kinda, yeah. So Justice Patterson, he looks back at Connecticut's history, you know, their legal traditions.
Well, context matters.
He's pointing out that the legislature, they've always had a hand in overseeing the courts. It's not like this was some crazy power move.
More like business as usual.
Exactly. It fit with how they'd always done things.
Okay, so one justice is all about respecting precedent. What about the others? Do they agree?
Well, Justice Iredell, she takes a way broader view. He's like, even if you see this as purely making a law and not just overseeing courts.
He's okay with it.
As long as we're talking about civil matters, yeah.
Wait, so he's basically saying even if they made a new law and applied it retroactively, it wouldn't necessarily be a problem, as long as it wasn't about crimes.
You got it. That's his stance.
Doesn't that raise some red flags about fairness? Like, how can people know what the rules are if they keep changing after the fact?
It's a great point. And that gets to this core tension about how much power legislatures should have, right? Can they shape the present by changing the rules of the past?
It's tricky.
It is. Justice Iredell seems to say there's more wiggle room when it's a civil issue. But criminal law, that's where he draws the line. Ex post facto still applies.
So, same conclusion, different paths.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much nuance there was, even in these early Supreme Court decisions.
Totally. It's like they were solving the same puzzle but using completely different methods. That's what makes Calder so rich. We're not just settling a squabble over a will here.
Right. There are these bigger issues at play.
Big time. We're talking separation of powers, how far laws can reach, and what fairness even means under the law.
Okay, let's bring this back to our listeners, especially those in the legal world. Why should lawyers and law students care about a centuries-old case about a will? What's the lasting impact of Calder v. Bull?
It might seem like ancient history, but Calder still has a ripple effect today. For one, it really solidified this crucial difference between criminal and civil retroactivity. That's huge EE for how we interpret and apply laws now.
You're saying legislatures have more freedom to tweak civil laws retroactively?
Exactly. Think property laws, contract stuff. There's more leeway there.
Right, because that ex post facto clause, after this case, it's all about criminal law.
Exactly. The other big takeaway is that focus on state sovereignty. The court in Calder, they didn't want to mess with state affairs, especially when it came to interpreting their own constitutions.
They were hands off.
Which is super important because that whole balance of power between federal and state, that's still a hot topic today.
No doubt. But here's what gets me thinking. If that line between criminal and civil retroactivity isn't always so clear, how do we decide where to draw it now? What about situations where laws seem to reach back in time, punishing actions that weren't even illegal before?
You're hitting on a huge question that lawyers deal with all the time. Think retroactive taxes, environmental regulations that hold companies responsible for stuff they did before it was against the rules.
It's like Calder. Even though it's old, it's still relevant.
It is. It makes us confront these tricky questions about fairness and justice and how far the government can go.
It's a reminder that what happened in the past can have a real impact on the present.
Absolutely. Calder gives us a framework for figuring out how to deal with those gray areas where past and present kind of clash in the legal world. It's like, yeah, legal concepts can seem straightforward.
But then you get a case like this.
And it shows just how complex and far-reaching those concepts can be.
All right, let's recap for our listeners.
Yeah.
We dug into Calder v. Bull, the whole drama with the will,
yeah.
Surprise move by the legislature, Calder's fight.
We broke down that ex post facto clause, how it applies specifically to criminal law, and how this case really made that crystal clear.
And we talked about those concurring opinions, how different justices got the same answer in their own way. Shows how much judicial interpretation matters, even way back then.
And don't forget those big picture themes. Separation of powers, where to draw the line on legislative authority.
And we wrapped up with Calder's lasting impact, especially for legal folks. And those thought-provoking questions about retroactivity, what's fair, what's not. But before we finish this deep dive, let's zoom out even more. Let's think about Calder in the grand scheme of the Supreme Court's role in American law. What does it tell us about their journey to becoming the powerful institution they are today?
It's like in Calder, they're testing the waters, right? Saying, hey, states, we get it, you have your own thing going on. But when it comes to the U.S. Constitution, we're the final word.
So it's kind of a preview of judicial review, that power to strike down laws they think are unconstitutional.
Exactly. Calder laid some groundwork for that big decision in Marbury v. Madison just a few years later. That's when the court really put its foot down.
Calder shows they weren't afraid to tackle those big constitutional questions, even when it meant wading into tricky areas like states' rights.
Totally.
So maybe Calder v. Bull isn't a household name like some other cases, but it's a key part of the story.
Oh, yeah. It shapes how we see the ex post facto clause, federalism, and the Supreme Court itself.
It's a reminder that even cases about wills, they can have this huge impact on how our whole legal system works.
And it's not just about some abstract legal theory, you know? It's about real people, real disagreements, and how those disagreements end up shaping what we think is fair and just.
Right. The human element is always there.
Always. And what I love about Calder is that it's not stuck in the past. It speaks to these questions we're still wrestling with today.
Like what? Give me some examples.
Okay. How do we balance individual rights and the power of the government? Where's the line when it comes to changing the rules retroactively? How do we make sure laws are just, not just in how they're used, but how far back in time they reach?
It really highlights how what happened before can have real consequences in the here and now.
Exactly. It's not like history just fades away. It's woven into our present, you know?
Yeah.
It influences the legal ideas we use and the discussions we have about what law even is in our society.
Well said. So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with this. Calder v. Bull might seem like a blast from the past, but it's full of insights that matter today. It's a case that goes beyond a simple will. It's about power, fairness, and that delicate balance at the heart of our legal system.
It makes you think, right? Where do we draw that line when it comes to retroactive laws? How do we make sure our laws are just in every sense of the word? Those are the kinds of questions Calder forces us to ask, even centuries later.
And those are questions worth pondering as we navigate the ever-changing world of law. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.